Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
Mr. Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Let's get it. Making it do with this dude, in the words of Ray Charles.
Let's go. Back like, whoa, like Black Rob.
Here we go. Like, whoa. I love it. Of course, America, welcome to Talking Sports from 12th Man. We're back on our Sunday time here. Today is June the 3rd, man. It is flying by, and we're ready to talk sports. I'm not going to miss any shots. I'm not going to, you know, get confused with the time, anything like that. We are ready to kick this party off, as we always like to do. And let's kick it off with my fellas. Mr. JQ, how you feeling, sir? You ready?
Oh, man, I'm good. I mean, I could be better. Cleveland got stomped. But, you know, I just want to shout out to my wife. You know, Ford's birthday was on Friday. So happy birthday, Erica. Ready to talk some sports with the fellas. So let's go.
Have some fun. Happy birthday, Erica. A lot of love, too. Mr. Rob Ford.
Yeah, happy birthday, Erica.
Yeah.
That's ready to talk some sports. Feeling great. Yeah. I'm on time this week.
Yes, sir. He was early.
I got that nap in. I made sure I wasn't going to be late this week.
Y'all
know what time I get up in the morning.
Yeah.
Whole day in the morning.
We're going to catch you some slack. We're going to catch you some slack, Rob. And like I said, I know to this day, JQ, I know this day, Rob is waiting. He's waiting for the day that I miss the show. He's going to go in, man. I know. He's already ready. So I'm making sure I'm prepared.
You already did it already. We went in on you already.
Yeah. If you do it again, you're in trouble. You're in major league trouble.
You got to give JQ a props. I don't think he slipped up yet.
I have not.
Has JQ slipped up?
No.
Still early, JQ.
No JQ stories out of the date.
He said, not today. Not today, JQ.
He's got perfect attendance so far. No target.
Yeah,
no effort.
Oh, man.
I'm going to stand up front with my plaque.
Oh, man. I love it. We're having a good time.
We're going to give him his props.
Ooh, goodness gracious. Hey, again, like I said, this is why a lot of love, America. We have fun, as we always do, too. So, again, let's throw these numbers real quick. 424-243-9519. That's the number to always call into your Charlie Two Boys. Hit us up on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And then last but not least, we are on Facebook, facebook.com/12thmansports, talking sports, 12th man. That's how you find us. So you got to feel me, fellas, too. Get over this cold, too. So if I kind of, you know, get through this, and I'm going to try to, like, be as brief as possible here, too. So we're going to have some fun here. But I know we got to talk about
herbal tea.
Yeah, I'm going to try to drink some tea, too, as well. I know we're definitely going to talk about some NBA playoff talk, too, but let's kick it off with some Major League Baseball here. Let's talk up with the Pirates and the Cardinals. And go ahead, Rob. Let's kick off with this. Rob, we'll talk about that as well.
Well, got two teams that are slightly above 500. Obviously, there's still quite a few games behind Milwaukee in that NL Central. But shucks, Michael Wacha lost a no-bid in the ninth inning tonight. Shucks, pitched a five-inning shutout over Pittsburgh tonight. Obviously, you know, the Pirates got a pinch-hit single in the ninth inning and, you know, stopped the no-hitter going for the Cardinals. But the Cardinals trying to get back in contention in that division. They're 3.5 games back. Got the 5-0 shutout victory over the Pirates tonight.
Yeah, it's crazy to see them regress. That Cardinals, that is, because you know they generally are always in the mix year and out. And Pittsburgh, you know, they not waving the white flag by Trey McCutcheon, but signaling their own kind of rebuild around you know Josh Harrison and Sterling Marte. So, they, you know, they're doing what they're supposed to do. It's not like how my Reds are just bringing up the rear. But you got to give Milwaukee a lot of credit in that division of some powers that they didn't expect Milwaukee to be to that level. So I still feel like, you know, St. Louis still got to get healthy as well. Adam Wainwright, you don't know what's going to happen with him. Molina's still hurt. DeJong is still coming back from breaking his hand by getting hit by a pitch. So you feel like they're going to be back in the mix. Pittsburgh has got a lot of good young pitching. So I don't expect either one of them really to go away. That NL Central, I'll tell you what, with Milwaukee and St. Louis and Pittsburgh, and you feel like at some point Chicago is going to turn it around. That is a really, really rough and tumble division there in the NL. So those series between those four are going to be – you're going to have that dynamic here moving forward probably to the end of the year.
My sir, love it. And like you said, I love the fact too, Rob, man, that no hit just got that was close. Everyone was kind of on the head, you know, definitely watching that too, and then to see it kind of slip away, man. So, but like you talk about, Cardinals are always there. I'm not crying for them too, like I said, you know, but I know I was going to ask you how you thought about that too, JQ, but, you know,
I
good
want,
to see that, you know,
that
even though they're barely
in a 0-0 tie.
I know you do. I know you do.
I do.
But it's definitely like, you know, it's good to see
no
how
such thing in baseball, unfortunately.
I can hope.
And that's why
I can hope.
And that's why Rob added that too. Good job, Rob, adding that too as a key point. Even though they barely above 500, that was a good game to kind of highlight a couple of those points as we talked about too. All right, gentlemen, let's talk about the next squad here. We got the you know, the top Braves against the Nationals. Soon, this was a pretty interesting series too, because even though I know the Nationals have a lot of injuries, you still got to, you know, keep playing well. Braves, guys, you know, like I was talking about earlier, Rob, to JQ, the fact of the matter is that this is definitely above schedule for what we were expecting from the Braves. And I'm excited, too, because the All-Stars are around the corner. We got some potential All-Stars. JQ, tell us about your squad. Not your squad, about the squad.
Whoa.
I apologize about the squad. I got a little excited about the squad. And your thoughts about the Braves, and we'll kick it over to Rob, because nothing brings more excitement to hear Rob talk about Atlanta teams. So go ahead from me, JQ, for that.
Well, I think, like you just touched on, I mean, they're definitely ahead of schedule. And those baby Braves, once again, you get a full team. If he turned the corner, I mean, an outstanding start on Friday night. And then, you know, Camargo, you know, holding Austin Riley out like we spoke about before in the minors because he's, you know, trying to get back and doing his thing at third base. And you still don't even have Acuna, but Freddie is Freddie. Albies is doing his thing. Swanson coming back in the form after being hurt. You know, Tyler Flowers and Suzuki, you know, platoon them at the catcher spot. The only thing I have about the Braves is the bullpen. Is their only really weakness right now. But they're ahead of schedule. And you can't really try for the Washington because Washington came into Atlanta on a flat-out road on the road. So it's not like, oh, they can't hang their hat on injuries because they've been playing well through injuries. They just ran into a good Atlanta team. But Washington, you're playing for first place, and you know, and you sit Bryce Harper today. Like these days of rest, they just give these dudes. And you know, we grew up in the days of Kyle Ripken playing all those many games through, you know, hell and high water, and you just give a dude a day off. Like, I know it's early, but these are these series that, you know, you look back on as measuring this kind of series, like, okay, I see you, you see us, we're going to be in it. Are you going to be in it? And you're on the road, you kind of want to make a statement, man. And he might be slumping a little bit, but I feel like you got to get all your guns blazing when you're on the road trying to hold off a young upstart squad. And you don't want to continue to give them confidence. But you do that, and they win in another walk-off. I don't think the Atlanta team is going anywhere. I really don't. I think you can pull the Mets out of it because of their injuries. I think the Nationals will stay around. I'm not sold on the Phillies. I think it's a Nationals and Braves, you know, kind of race to win the NL East.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it too. We'll let Rob kick in this here too. But good call, and I got to definitely say about Fulton Nevich, man, you got to hope that he gets consistent right now because that's the biggest challenge too. Because when he'll have a really good game, then you have like a social thing. But, you know, Newcomb is pitching extremely well too, man. So I'm excited to see his development. And we'll talk about that. You mentioned Camargo and, you know,
on Friday.
That's just, you see like glimpses of that too, but you hope that he continues to get a little bit more consistent and actually grow with that too, man. Because again, we have dreams of the old school squad of Glavin, Smoltz, Maddox.
Hey,
I mean, man, even Steve Avery. Yeah. I mean, but I can only hope, man. But, hey Rob, your thoughts about the Braves and Nationals and what you think about what you see about the Braves.
Well, I think you guys covered it very well already. I don't think it's really much for me to say. Obviously, you got a big pinch hit, two-run shot by Charlie Culberson to help you win the game with a 4-2 victory tonight over the Nationals, preserving a game-and-a-half lead over Nationals for first place. And I think JQ said it best. I think at this point in the season, I think you can see that the Braves are going to be a contending team going forward. I don't see that, you know, really changing either. I think at this point in the season, you kind of know who the pretenders and the contenders are going to be. And, you know, right now they're in the mix. They got the second-best record in the National League behind the Milwaukee Brewers. And I don't really see it in Washington, even though Washington's got the third-best record, even though they're in second place. But I think we're going to see both of those teams in the running going forward. And, you know, the NL West, who knows what's going to happen in that division with all four of the teams pretty much still in the race, or four of the five teams still in the race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like I said, too, we left a little bit, Rob. I was going to leave something open for you as far as the fact that we've been the Braves, that as they've been coming behind and making some really good come-behind wins, and just kind of shows they're fearless, too, that they're not, you know, scared of, you know, hey, we're still down. And before, I think we didn't have that type of instinct to kind of come from behind, just really, like, we're going to go to our last out and just kind of make plays, too, man. So it's happened, you know, they've won a couple of games in that particular instance, too, man. But good calls, and we will turn the page on that. All right, JQ, we apologize, man. We got to talk about your Reds, man, and the Padres, too. You kind of gave us a precursor about how you felt about your Reds, man. So we're going to let you have this moment, man. So what are your thoughts, man?
Well, I'll start off. I appreciate Rob trying to give me some love. You know, we were playing the Padres. He felt like, you know, we could probably get 2 out of 3 versus. So I will give Rob credit. He wasn't trying to throw me under the bus.
Two last-place teams.
Yeah, just two bad teams playing each other, playing bad baseball. But in all honesty, if you look at the Reds, and, you know, one of my favorite words is you juxtapose them with the Braves, they were on similar paths in terms of tearing it down and trying to rebuild through the draft. And you got to give the Braves a lot of credit that they've done it right and hit on all those Albie, Swanson, Acuna kind of picks. And the Reds, they don't have a pitching staff from the starters to the bullpen. And they've got some guys that can hit here and there, like you know, Scooter's playing good ball at second base, Jeanette. You've got Votto. Suarez is playing a good third base. But the only pitcher I think anybody in baseball may want is our closer in Iglesias. But no, they want nobody else from our pitching staff. And that's where it shows up. They lose 2 or 3 against San Diego, lose today, I believe, 6-3. They got crushed yesterday, 8-1. It's those kind of things. They just don't have Major League caliber starting and relief pitching. And you're almost to the point where you look at the Braves being a year ahead. I feel like the Reds are maybe 2 or 3 years behind, where you almost feel like, okay, this isn't working. These guys, we can't bank them now. We have to start over again, and we got to get some other evaluators in here to get some better picks, you know, when we're picking higher in the draft. And it's frustrating to come from a city with a team like that has a lot of tradition to see them stay on continued hard times. And it's – sorry, Reds fans, but you got some more years left for this. Unless they start signing people on free agent and something happens, you know, differently in the mix, I don't see this, you know, changing anytime soon.
So they just missed a lot of their picks, is what you're trying to say, as far as with the farm system and everything like that? Wow, okay.
I feel like that. I mean, they've you know, you've got Iglesias. Descofini can't stay healthy. You traded for Finnegan. Mm-hmm. You had to demote him to the minors. You let Cueto go, even though he got hurt, and you kept Homer Bailey. Now you're putting Homer Bailey in the bullpen because he's been so bad as a starting pitcher. Castillo, who was supposed to last year, showed a lot of glimpses of maybe being that guy, but has taken a step back this year, and he takes the loss today against San Diego, giving up a grand slam in that big old mammoth of a park in San Diego. It's just hard to find any, you know, lights of, you know, of excellence for that team where you're like, okay, I can count on this and maybe this. It's bad right now for the Reds. I mean, that's no way to sugarcoat it.
Wow. Rob, what do you got to say on this?
Well, I mean, like I said, I don't think there's really much else for me to say on that. you know, I always say nobody knows their team better than the fan of a team. So, obviously, I don't know the Reds as well as JQ knows the Reds.
And
so,
and they
never
know.
Yeah, nobody knows their team like a fan of a team. And obviously, it's a tough situation for both of these organizations right now. I mean, San Diego got the win tonight, but obviously, neither one of these teams are going anywhere this year. The only way is up going forward here for the future. But, you know, they got the, you know, the grand slam home run that lifted them over to victory tonight. Got the 6-3 victory and pretty much won it in the fifth inning tonight. But yeah, neither one of these teams are really heading anywhere when you look at their positioning. I mean, the Reds are 16 games back, and I mean, the Padres are only 5.5 games back. So I mean, they're in a pretty weak division right now. But still, I don't expect them to go anywhere as well. You got to think that the Dodgers may get it going at some point. You got to think that even the Giants may even get it going at some point this year as well in that division. But you can't expect the Padres to do anything even in the weak division.
Yeah, I think the Diamondbacks can win that division. They can hit and they can pitch. I think it's just – and they got good relief pitching and Boxberger and Bradley. I think the Diamondbacks are going to end up separating themselves, and you're going to find probably maybe the loser of the NL East being one wild card in a fight for one of the wild cards, and then you got that jumbled, you know, competitiveness in the NL Central with those four teams. You know, I fully expect Pittsburgh and probably more St. Louis to pick it up with the Cubs, and I don't think Milwaukee's going to go anywhere. So I think the West gets one, the East gets one. They maybe have a second one in play, but you probably get three out of the Central. It could happen.
Wow. I got to tell you, it seems like a long way from the Trevor Hoffman days from the Padres, man. Just, man, it seems so far away, man.
Oh, yeah.
But,
Trevor
how good,
was
how good they were. Remember how great they were? That seems like a long time ago, man. But anyway.
Tony Gwynn seemed like 50 years ago.
I know, right?
Really good call,
R.I.P.
too.
Tony
Love
Gwynn.
Tony Gwynn, man. Man, great. Man, R.I.P., man. Great, great hitter. I had a good start on him, too. He had one of the smallest bat sizes that he used because he helped with his quickness, man. So that dude was just perfect hitter, man. Love it. All right. Hey, Rob, let's now we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk about some NBA, which is going to be the rest of the show here. And we've heard a lot of talk about this, a lot of commentary about, you know, LeBron and, you know, making the right basketball play. And I guess the question is, did he make a mistake by passing the ball to George Hill at the end of regulation in game one? So, Rob, floor is yours about this, man. What do you think about that?
Well, I actually think I don't have a problem with him making a pass to George Hill at that point. And at some point if you're gonna have any chance of beating a team like the Warriors, you're gonna have to have some guys that's gonna have to help you out to win them. LeBron can't beat these people by himself, and I mean you can see you can pretty much see the game on game one. You can see the game tonight as well. That is really seems like it's just one against five. And that was the correct basketball play to make. And George Hill got fouled, and he missed the free throw. And so obviously he had an opportunity to still score a couple of points right there. And you know, he's over 80-something% foul shooter, and he missed the second foul shot. And you know, shucks, let's not even talk about the J.R. Smith blunder, and what was he thinking,
gosh,
and what kind of weed he was smoking. But
that Cali
Kush. Yeah. But, you know, I don't have a problem with the decision he made to pass the at some point, I think LeBron has got to find a way to when to be selfish and when to make the correct basketball move. And tonight's game, it seemed like, you know, he was probably more selfish than what he should have been. And so, I mean, but that particular play in that particular game, I think he made the right basketball decision. And as you saw tonight, he really was going up to the basket with three, four people hanging all over him quite often, not in tonight's basketball game. So he's, you know, got to find out. I don't think he trusts his teammates. So I think at this point it's really hard for him. But he's got to figure out a way to pick his poison, when to be selfish and when not to be selfish. But to answer that question, I don't think that was a bad decision by his part in that particular game. George Hill just didn't come through with the foul shooting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely the correct play. And like you said, tonight and Dre, you touched on it and you followed up with it, Rob, trust. And when you see that happen where I make the correct basketball play and I will never kill him for that, and he gets to the free throw line, you got to make those free throws. You can't let your butthole get that tight where you're an 80% free throw shooter and you miss it that bad. And then J.R. Smith, for the love of Christ, what are you doing? That is just, you know, it's egregious. It's inexcusable to miss that free throw and then to make that play. You don't know if J.R. Smith is going to make that shot, but you shouldn't even be in that situation if George Hill just makes his free throws. I mean, I can't kill him for that. And what you say tonight, It is definitely a trust thing. I mean, when you see your team collapse like that and they're not making open shots, you're like, okay, I can't count on them. I have to do it myself. And it's hard as a human being not to feel like that. It's like, you know, I don't want to lose by 40 points because I kept making a great basketball play, but you didn't finish your end of the play. And it's like, now everybody's going to kill me for not going 1-on-3 because I'm a force of nature, even though I shouldn't make that play. I should kick it to you. But if I can't trust that you're going to make a wide open shot, a three-pointer, corner three-pointer, or, you know, a mid-range shot, I can't fault him for that. He's in a lose-lose, but he's also in a win-win. He's in a lose-lose in that if he does too much, then he's not getting anybody involved. If he does, you know, not trying to be selfish enough, then everybody's going to say, oh, well, you got to take the game over. But the flip side of that is it's been exposed on the national stage that these dudes that he's playing with are just not those guys. You know what I mean? Like, they're just not those guys. They're not going to get it done for him. So it's like, you know, you can appreciate his greatness and people are going to kill him for having another loss in the finals. But if you're really watching this as of somebody that watches basketball and likes basketball, you're looking at this like he has no chance. Those guys are not equipped to come out there and beat the Golden State Warriors. They're not, and definitely not four times in seven games.
Nope, it's not going to happen. Yep, you know, you have to be a realist as a basketball fan, as a basketball expert. I mean, you have to be a realist. I think his haters are going to come out and talk about the wins and losses. But I think if you're a pure basketball purist and really understand the game, you have to just realize what he's going up against. And I've said this before on the show. I know we argued about this a little bit on the last show, but J.Q. Lakers in the 2000s against this Warriors team. But, I mean, this Warriors team is just as good as any basketball team that I've seen since I've been watching basketball. And you'd be hard-pressed to find a team with this many weapons, this many scorers, and he's trying to beat these teams by himself. Yeah, it's unrealistic to expect those kind of expectations, even for those LeBron haters out there.
So
yeah,
I'm gonna
a lot of them.
Yeah, I'm gonna say this too, and I'm gonna kind of add something to this because again, in regards to, you know, we always talk about LeBron versus, you know, Jordan and all that stuff like that. I'd say, you know, LeBron lost because of his outfit, number one. You know, you never saw Jordan wear anything like that, so that's my little my little side thing.
Oh,
I'm totally joking. But
it has nothing to do with the game.
I'm totally joking. No, but what I'm going to say, I was trying to, like, bring some levity.
I don't like
that
outfit either,
that.
But it had nothing to do with the game.
I was just,
do you know that game was
–
that's
I think the NBA
$6,000.
Needs to. Speaking of that, though, you remember when the players were allowed to wear anything to the game, and David Stern changed the rules that they had to come
the
to the game business attire, mainly because of the way Allen Iverson and Tim Duncan used to dress coming to the games. You know, Tim Duncan, his shirts was wrinkled. You know, with jeans and t-shirt and whatever.
Oh, no.
Allen Iverson got chains around his neck, the pants sagging off of him. And David Stern changed that and made it the NBA. Now, I think they need to go back and explain to these guys what is business attire.
Yeah, 100%.
It's not business attire.
That was terrible. Anyway,
what is business attire?
That suit was $46,000.
I know.
$46,000 for a suit short set.
Is there any suit worth that kind of money?
I gotta have the whole pants for $46,000.
I'm talking about
some knickers.
That's like a romper suit, man. That was crazy.
Not a romper.
Yeah.
No, come off.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying.
But Adam Silver's got to go back and say, hey, what is business attire? Shorts. It's not business attire.
I'm
totally
with you.
Joking, guys. But I just want to throw that in there. I
but this
kind
of fashion wasn't out when Jordan was playing, though. These guys wearing capris and
crazy.
All this
man
coolness
and
stuff that
parts,
Cam Newton wears and Russell Westbrook and Dwayne Wade.
So bad. So bad.
Yeah,
so
the man purse has got to go.
That too.
Yes.
Hey, I know on the starters, they always talk about fashion nose and knots. Man, that's just, we got to stop this with the quickness. But anyway, I digress. I was just trying to add some levity to the moment. I will say this. In the first game, I thought the first game, that was, like I said, LeBron had a dominant performance. And that was – they could have pulled that off. And I'm going to say something that's pretty key, guys. And this
it's hard
something
to recover
shows
from a game like that, too.
It is. But I'm going to say this. Something that's very important that basketball intelligence, basketball IQ, we talk about it all the time. And if you have players that have that definitely separates it. That's what I'm going to call – the J.R. Smith play, because you have to have awareness about what's happening. You know, even if you say, all right, I'm going to miss, if something happens, if George Hill misses that free throw like he did, you know, you got to know what's happening. Okay, I got 3.5 seconds here. We got to know, we got a timeout. We can set this play. And that's why the play was even, it made no sense. It was so asinine, like you talked about, as far as what's going on. I mean, even LeBron, like, what? You know, you have to have your squad that knows exactly what's going on, too. So, again, you can have all the talent in the world. You can talk about, you know, greatest players that are, but there's something that, you know, that separates certain players as far as having, you know, football IQ, basketball, you hear it all the time, too. So, again, that's something that, whether that's coaching, I mean, everyone has to know the situation. Hey, if there's something 5 seconds here, you got to call a timeout, we get the rebound, set yourself up for the next play, you know? So that's why. And J.R., he sounded like a kid, man. You got kids, you know, both of you guys have kids. You know, whenever he sounded like he was getting, I don't know what happened. And, you know, that's exactly how he said it, man. It was so bad.
It was bad.
Oh,
it was bad. You can't recover from that. That's the game.
Even before that play the
other
night, I've been saying the whole playoffs, the Cavs are in trouble if they got to play J.R. Smith this many minutes.
Wow.
Because if he's not knocking down outside shots, he's useless. He doesn't bring nothing else to the table. He can't get guys open. He can't defend. If he's not hitting wide open threes, he's a useless ball player to that team. And I even knew that watching the Cavs all playoffs, even prior to the game the other night. Andre hit it on the head with his basketball IQ. It doesn't seem like he has a clue what's going on out there.
And
now you're going against the Warriors, a team that's loaded with all stars, and you're going running out there with J.R. Smith on the court, who doesn't have a clue what's going on out there.
Oh, man.
And they don't have a chance. And like I said, I was saying that even before they got to the Warriors. It's just that obviously going through the Eastern Conference was a lot easier than going through the Warriors, and they were able to get by with a guy with J.R. Smith, like J.R. Smith on the court. But they have no shot. They're going to be throwing J.R. Smith out there and playing them 30 minutes. Even if you got to play him 20 minutes, you ain't got a shot.
And you know what? Who else I'm really disappointed in is Jordan Clarkson. He got that second contract from the Lakers and the trade. I thought he would be a good sidekick, you know, kind of secondary player to LeBron. And you almost can't even play Jordan Clarkson. And, he better be glad he signed that contract a couple years ago, because he won't never see that money again. So,
Rodney Hood and to some degree Larry Nance. I thought Larry Nance was going to be the guy that was going to help him more than any of the guys, because I thought his athleticism was going to bring something to the table. And I thought he was a guy that could be a difference maker for them, especially on the defensive end. And so I think a lot of those guys that they got in that midseason trade, I don't know if it was because they hadn't had time to really adjust, but I think a lot of those guys really hadn't stepped up to the way you've, George Hill missing a free throw, he's probably the one guy that's at least bringing it on the defensive end a little bit, even though Steph just went off on the night. They just don't have the horses to beat the Warriors. That's just the bottom line.
Agreed.
I just think it's a little inexperienced, because even before, I mean, if you had a shot to win, you blew that. But see, that's the difference between playing, you know, a team like the Raptors, because, you know, they had a couple opportunities, and then now you play the Warriors, like we talk about, too. And then we talk about talent all the time, and I know you guys are going to be a hard time and whatnot, too. But you definitely got to think about the fact is, as far as, you know, you have certain squads, you know, you look at, like, OKC, and they have a pretty potent, you would think a pretty potent squad, but they haven't gelled either. So there's something that's a little off, you know, chemistry and trust and everything like that, too, as far as, you know, whenever you're playing, too. But I think right now this iteration of the Cavaliers, like you said, you expected Rodney Hood to kind of do his thing, not Larry Nance. They just haven't. It seems like there's like a lack of inexperience, as far as these big game moments too. So, again, that's what I'm blaming. And LeBron can't do it by himself, unfortunately. Let's keep moving here.
Wasted.
We talked about a couple of players here that we thought were gonna. anytime we bring up Draymond Green, I just think about habitual line stepper. Obviously, that's just the funniest thing I think about.
That he is.
Again, it's always like he's always in the middle of something, right? And him and, you know, he's always like a fodder from Charles Barkley to everyone. And now him and Tristan Thompson have some, you know, did the same thing, have had some interesting, you know, things here. And I guess game, should they have been suspended? This is kind of interesting. This is kind of a strong thing as far as that, too. I mean, it's kind of like let him play for the sake of the game. Draymond is more instrumental. I could actually go. Tristan is more needed now, but
yeah.
What do you think about that? Should they have been more suspended, or is just, you know? I'm glad what happened. The NBA kind of let it kind of, you know, go to the wayside here. But what do you think about that, JQ? As far as what's happening between Draymond and Tristan Thompson?
Well, and Rob hit it. He's just an instigator, but you have to know that's who you're dealing with. You can't let his words get you fired up to that point where you put the ball in his face. As much as we all love it, that are not Golden State fans, and, you know, that you can't let that happen. I'd rather them what they did. You find them, you hit them in the pocket, but you don't affect the next game's outcome by suspending them if no punch has been thrown. So I was 100% behind that. If you want to find them, hit them. If you want to hit them hard in the wallet, but don't affect the competitive balance of the series by suspending them. So I was okay with that, actually. And I think a lot of the NBA was like, you know what, Draymond was down there even before then on the foul line shot, you know, talking stuff to LeBron and dancing and all that other stuff. And he's an agitator, and that's who he is, and the NBA knows he's an agitator. And he got into Tristan Thompson's skin, and you can't let that happen, and you can't push the ball in the space, and you have to pay for that. But don't suspend him. I agree with that. You hit him in the pocket, and you let that next game be its own entity and not let it be affected by what happened in the last 15, 20 seconds of game one. Find him, no suspension.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree with that decision by the NBA. You know, if we got into fist fight, guys throwing punches, and everybody's leaving out of there bloody, that's another story. But, you know, they jumped in, everybody calmed themselves down, the players helped each other out in this situation. I totally agree. You don't want to, man, it's got to be something really major for you to really, you know, mess up the NBA Finals. I mean, I think the NBA, you know, I might have would have fined them a little bit more money. But I think the right decision was made to not to suspend in this particular situation. So I think that's a good move by the NBA. And if this was in the 90s, I think the NBA would have went overboard and probably suspended Thompson, Draymond Green, and Kevin Love. And I think the right decision was made in this particular situation. I mean, we saw back in the 90s when Miami Heat and New York Knicks was going at it with Chuck. They were pretty much playing with their bench players out there in a few major games in the NBA playoffs.
That was not entertaining, by the way. Yeah.
Exactly.
No,
exactly.
That 75-70 final score.
Yeah.
Not what we
yes.
want.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think the NBA handled it well. I think the teams was able to calm their players down and, you know, and get their emotions in order there. So I think the right decision was made.
Yeah.
I'll say this, and speaking of agitators, you know, Draymond, and I'm going to ask you guys, too, as far as some good agitators, because every time I think about Draymond, it reminds you of the Bill Laimbeers of the world, you know, just players that just got underneath your, like Danny Ainge, and got underneath your skin.
I was going to say Danny Ainge.
Everyone needs a player like that, you know, just to kind of, like, take the edge off, you know, like, you know, somebody like, all right, I'm going to take all the fodder, I'm going to take the – and believe it or not, you know, that's kind of why you appreciate that role, because, you know, you may not like him, he might have all his skills, but he does his role. You know, I'm there to be the emotional leader, whatever. Bill Laimbeer was a great player too, so I'm not saying it from that perspective, but you always need a player like that to try to sit there and, you know, I'm going to set the tone, you know, to be the bad guy per se, and to kind of like help, you know, take the efficient away from the squad, you know, and that player's needed, man. So I think about Draymond in that position. I know Rob, you talked about he's an instigator, he's doing everything that he does, but you know, you need a player like that, you know, honestly, to kind of like...
Well, I mean, yeah, I think he plays the perfect role for the Warriors, and I think JQ said it best earlier, too. I think, you know, the best way to respond to that as an opposing team, have fun with it. You can't let the guy get under your skin. You got to have fun with it. You got to laugh with him, or you got to come back with something, but you got to, you know, do something to not let it affect you in your game. You got to laugh, you got to talk, and I think you got to talk back to him, because then maybe he's going to go overboard.
Oh,
and but you got to be able to keep your composure with a Draymond Green. And to me, like I said, you got to either laugh with them, shake your head, or do something to make sure it doesn't affect you and your game. And or you got to talk some smack right there with them, and but not go overboard to where it gets you the best of your composure. And but you know, he plays that role. He's that Dennis Rodman of the Warriors. That's what he's out there to do. He's out there to get under the other player's skin and hopes that they can lose a player that they really need. And you know, that's just his antics. That's just his style. But to me, you just got to be able to combat that with your own energy and bring the same thing that he's bringing.
You know what I think about him, and we can let this one go. And wasn't even an NBA player. When I think about him outside of those other NBA comps, I also think about Bill Romanowski in the NFL that played middle linebacker for a number of teams, and he was an absolute agitator. He stopped on your foot after the play. He pushed you. Heck, he spit J.J. Stokes in his face, you know, but
so bad.
You hated him from another team, but you needed that kind of agitator. He took all the arrows and all the hate from another team, and he was able to channel it and make his play raise because of it. The only thing I would disagree with Rob on is I would just ignore him. Even if you laugh at it or talk back to him, that feeds his fire. It's like Reggie Miller. Like when he needed to get himself going, he would just start talking stuff, get in your face and go crazy. I think you have to be able to laugh about it, but you have to be able to walk away and answer that with your play on the court and not get him going. Some people will get better when you talk to him, and he's one of those guys. If you just let him talk, no matter what he says, you let him talk, and you just show him up the next couple times down the court, I think that was frustrating him the most is when he can't get under your skin and you respond by playing well, that makes him a worse player. But when you start talking to him, it elevates his play, and it's hard to match that even if you still play well. If you play well and don't give him that ammunition to get himself going, that's when you kind of are able to shut him down. But it's a lot easier said than done in the heat of the moment when somebody's saying probably something totally disrespectful to you to turn the other cheek. So I'm not saying it's easy, but I think that's what you need to do for Draymond Green. You have to just be able to tune him out totally, focus it on the court, and respond by getting buckets on him.
We have about 8 minutes here. I love it. And good call about that, too. We'll wrap this topic up. But I do want to say the fact that it reminded me, like you said, just the line of players out before you kind of like send like your least bench player to kind of take out a player, too. Like, hey, I'm going to get this player out of the game and just get him suspended, man. Just little tactics like that, man. And so that's why I'm glad, like Rob said, the NFL, like you said, you know, the NBA has done its thing as far as, like, hey, we'll throw money at him, but we're not necessarily going to suspend him, man, because we kind of learned our lesson earlier, too. And I guess I was trying to tie that into as far as how the antics are, I mean, how should they deal with that? I think you've answered that correctly, too. So, Rob, you think you've answered all of that as far as how we should deal with that?
Or just
kind of go with it, you know? Okay, cool. All right. Good deal. All right. Now we're going to grade LeBron's performance here in game one. And I think we've all nailed it on the head as far as game one was on point. He had, 51 points, something crazy like that.
51.
Probably 51, yeah. But I guess near the end, you know, that was probably the best game for them to try to, like, set the tone. And unfortunately, they came short because of what had happened, too. So, again, you know, you got to give them all A-pluses on the map here as far as what he did. But, unfortunately, it just because of the way the game played out. So, again, I'm giving thumbs up for that. What are your thoughts about that, JQ?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to belabor it. I mean, he was phenomenal in that game one. And he talked about how it was one of the worst losses of his career. Because what else can you ask him? He scored 51, the rest of the team scored 63, and they lost. I mean, if you look at it from that standpoint of, you know, all the haters that get on him, it's like, what else would you want him to do? Maybe he could have forced a shot, but he got to do to the free throw line with a chance to take the lead with 5 seconds left in the game. Those are all the correct plays. He played A++, almost spotless, you know, some of the turnovers, but, you know, a very, very good game. I mean, there's nothing else. A great game. Not even a good game. A great game. One of those games that if you took yourself out of the LeBron hatred, love him spectrum that we live in right now and just appreciate what he did, it's one of the best games you've ever seen an individual guy have in the NBA Finals. And they lost, and that's what's going to kill LeBron. But it wasn't because of him. I mean, there's nothing you can say. I mean, people talk about he flopped. Now you look at his eye all bloodshot red. Like, no, he didn't. He got jacked in the eye. He still put 51 on those dudes, and they lost.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be deflating to you when you go and play probably your best game you can have in a game one in the finals and still lose.
Excellent game plan. Go ahead, Rob. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Well, yeah, and one other thing I'll add to that is I thought he did an incredible job controlling the pace of the game in game one, too.
Yep.
And I thought, you know, he really controlled the pace of that basketball game. And he did a phenomenal job picking his poison in that particular game, too. And I think it was a master performance in game one. And he gave his team every opportunity to win that game, and they came up short.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of reasons. Obviously, you know, you can make a point about the officiating and how they overturned the call
mm-hmm.
at the missed free
mm-hmm.
throw, the J.R. Smith. He just had a lot of blunders that happened in that last minute of that ball game, and that really cost them. A combination of the officiating and a combination of the Cavaliers beating themselves, too. In that
mm-hmm.
basketball game, and it cost them, and too much for them to overcome in overtime, and the Warriors just got extremely hot, but yet a mastery performance in the game. Like I said, I think more than anything is that he really controlled the pace of that basketball game for the Cavaliers,
mm-hmm.
And even had the Warriors out of sync a little bit on the offensive end by the way he controlled the pace of the game. Now, obviously tonight, 29 points, 13 rebounds, I'm sorry, 13 assists and 9 rebounds, almost a triple-double. For the average player, that's still a very good basketball game. And but it didn't seem like he had the same energy tonight. And I thought
mm-hmm.
he struggled with picking his spots in the game on tonight.
Trust.
And like
yeah.
I said, a lot of that
yeah.
we talked about earlier is due to the trust factor. His teammates
yep.
are just not stepping up for him, and it's really hard for him. And he missed a lot of shots around the basket tonight, but most of those were with two, three guys hanging all over him. And
mm-hmm.
another thing, for a player of his caliber, he don't get the calls. And I don't know
mm-hmm.
if it's because he's big and strong and things of that nature. It doesn't look like he's getting fouled. But especially early in this game tonight, I thought he was fouled quite a few times and he didn't get the calls. On tonight, I don't think that's a difference in the game, but he doesn't get the calls, and we saw that in game one. I think you saw it a little bit here on tonight as well. I don't think the officials know how to officiate LeBron James, similar to the way they didn't know how to officiate Shaq, but I think Phil
yep.
Jackson was able to manipulate the referees a lot better with getting the calls for him. But I think they're struggling because he definitely doesn't get the calls that Jordan got. He definitely didn't get the calls that Shaq and Kobe got. And I don't know, like I said, it's because he's just so much stronger than the players that are out there on the court guarding him.
Hmm.
Hey, hold
that
thought.
Yeah, just,
here. Hold
okay.
on, hold
yep.
because we're getting ready to come to 2 minutes here. So we're going to let Rob set us up because we're about 2 minutes here for the OT portion. So, Rob, go ahead and set this up. And, JQ, I'll let you have the first crack at that comment. So hold that thought. And go ahead, Rob, do what you got to do, bro.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back at you live on next Sunday night. Next Sunday night will be June 10th. We're coming at you 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Pacific for our fans in the Bay Area and also the L.A. area and the Seattle area, Portland area. So we'll be at you at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on next Sunday night. We appreciate everyone tuning in. Definitely let us know if you like or dislike some of our comments. We'd love to hear from you all. Good night, people.
Yeah, man, echo everything that Rob just said. We appreciate y'all tuning in. Sorry we took a little time off, but, you know, life intervenes. We got to do what we got to do. We'll be back on next Sunday. And I'm super, super, super – you know, it's crazy. Like, I really wasn't a soccer fan, but United made me a soccer fan, and I'll give them credit for that. And I was at the game on Saturday that they won. But I am super excited about Cincinnati getting a team and them being able to come down here so I can see them in person. I am going to be acting a fool. I don't know about the orange and blue. It's a little too much New York Mets colors for me, but I'm going to be out there in my orange and blue when they come down here. Super excited about that. And please listen in because I definitely have to. Oh, yeah, we're going to be clad. Tuning into the OT portion because I've got some thoughts there on that piece that Rob just talked about because I've never seen anything like it in terms of that call overturn. So y'all stay tuned. We'll just download it and get my thoughts on it.
Sorry we can't bring the OT portion to you live, ladies and gentlemen, but click on the same link on tomorrow. We still got some more basketball to talk about. So click on the same link and you will hear the rest of our comments on the NBA here. You don't want to miss it, so definitely click on the same link on tomorrow. Coming forward, we're going to have some NFL predictions on the next few weeks going forward, and we're still going to get that NBA draft coverage here going for you here in the next few weeks prior to the NBA draft. So those are just some things for you all to look forward to upcoming here on Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Good night, people.
Good night, yes, people. Sir. All right, and I'm excited, fellas. I didn't get to, I'm trying to hold this, but I will be DJing in Vegas pretty soon, man. So I'm excited about that, man. I'll tell you about that plays out, man. So that's going to be big, man. It's going to be around
awesome,
July 4th, man. So that's going to be
told
fun,
you,
man.
Right,
so, I can only hope, man. But I'm excited about the two, man. So that's the call.
Doing
so,
it
it's going to be fun. Woo!
Yes, sir.
Gonna fly me out, man.
Going to Viva Las Wages.
Yeah, nice. We'll talk about that later too, man. So
J.R. Smith, you gotta be kidding me, right?
Yeah.
5 points tonight. He says he has a miserable game tonight, but he loved the attention he got from the Warriors fans.
Yeah,
what an idiot.
He's special. He's special.
JQ, go ahead. Go ahead.
My only thing is, and Rob, he led me to it like a horse to water. Never in your life have you seen an NBA superstar of that caliber have a charge overturned. I've seen them go to the video and say, okay, his baby toe or his, you know, the last quarter centimeter of his heel was on the restricted circle. We're going to overturn that. I've never, ever seen the refs go to it, see a guy of his caliber. I mean, you can say he slid into it. We can have that argument. But they made the call on the floor. I've never seen them go to it and say, hey, both of his feet are outside the restricted circle. But you know what? He's good in that moment. But we missed this call, and we're going to overturn it and give them two free throws. I've never seen that happen. Can you imagine the uproar? Even if it's, if you take LeBron James out of that and you put Michael Jordan that against Utah or Phoenix where they replay it, and he slides into that charge, and they call the charge in Michael's favor, and they go look at the replay, and they overturn it, and they give the other team two free throws the other way. Can you imagine the uproar and the hubbub and just the disdain for the referees that you would get? I mean, it's unbelievable. I text you guys for everybody else listening to it. I've never seen that. And that's what makes people like, come on, you know, you just don't want to lose money if Cleveland wins this because they're such a long shot. Like, he doesn't get the calls. And Rob touched on it perfectly. I just don't feel like he gets it. There's things that he does that rubs people the wrong way that I can't explain, like that suit, like and sometimes the winder. But Michael was also a winder that people would like to gloss over. He was fouled on every play that he didn't make a shot. Go back and check the tape. But I've never seen them do that, go to the video monitor and overturn a call like that against a superstar. I was flabbergasted. I was out watching, and I was like, oh, he's good. He had 2 feet outside the circle, and they overturned it. I said, wait, what? I didn't know you could overturn a call like that if it wasn't on the letter of the law of being in a restricted circle. I didn't even know you could do that. I was so shocked at it. I mean,
I didn't even know you could overturn a charge or a blocking foul.
I knew you could if you were inside the circle. But once they said that you were outside the circle, I didn't know they could then say, oh, you were outside the circle, but I made the wrong call and I'm going to overturn it because I don't feel like it was a charge. That piece of it, I didn't know you could do. I was shocked at that, flabbergasted. Like, this is LeBron James. I mean, I know that's Kevin Durant, but that's LeBron James. You called it in his favor, and then you overturned it? I mean, come on now. They just don't do that. They don't do that. I've never seen it.
Yeah. He definitely does not get the calls that former superstars have gotten in his league. And even tonight, I mean, some of the three-point shots, Steph Curry does this all this acting job where he just throws his body on the floor all wild. Like he been sucker punch, and he gets that call every single time. Every single time he does it, somebody just touches his little finger, he throws his body on the ground, and he always call that damn foul.
a lot of players do that too. It's not just Steph. A lot of players, you know, act, you know, and try to get calls too. So I'm just saying, don't. I mean, everyone has a bag of dumb. But yeah, fair enough. But I'm saying everyone has some acting to him to get
Steph
calls.
Steph gets that call every damn time, and they just put a little finger on him, and he throws his body to the ground, and he gets the call.
I'm going to tell you like this. If you listen to the telecast, Jeff Van Gundy was absolutely right. He said, we got to do something about this, you know, pump fake where you jump into the player and you get that call on the three-point line or even out there. I mean, not just Steph. for everybody. If you pump fake and you go straight up and they hit you, that's a foul. But if you jump into them or that Reggie Miller kicked the leg out and get hit and get that three shots, they've got to find a way to officiate that more consistently. I agree with you, Rob.
Absolutely.
It's a joke, but it's not just Steph Curry. It's the NBA epidemic where they all plan for it. They just jump.
But he gets away with it more than anybody in the league.
Well, like I said, it's a tactic because, I mean, you know,
I've seen it every playoff series. Well, not the first one we didn't play, but.
But I'm just saying, I mean, it's kind of par for the course. I mean, you figured out – I'm not saying it's good or bad. Well, I'll say this about the officiating, too, because, again, you know, the overturned – this is kind of like in all sports, right? You know, instant replay football, VBR for soccer. I mean, they're trying so hard to get calls right that they're actually messing it up. You know, whenever you're pulling goals off, you know, for Atlanta United, and, you know, you're putting the game in the control of the refs too much as opposed to letting the game come naturally, that's whenever it's becoming a problem, too, because, again, you know, and I think they're gonna come down and say, all right, you know, whatever the call is, you know, live, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, there's certain things that, you know, whenever it looks a certain way live, kind of let it go. I mean, you know, if it's egregious to the point where it's going to affect the game in a certain way, that's whenever, you know, I can agree with, all right, let's take a look at it, too, but you know, there's got to be something coming into next season or something like that to say, hey, let's kind of reevaluate how we're analyzing these calls and, you know, doing certain things to switch the calls and take points off. It's terrible. You know, that's something that definitely has to be addressed, not only in the NBA, but all sports. I mean, we still don't know what to catch it to this day, apparently, because the NFL can't get it right. But it's just one of those things, man, that we got to figure this out, man, you know, for the sake of the game that we supposedly love and we're trying to watch. You know, we're trying to do too much to tweak it, and it's giving refs to have too much power. And I will say this, in spite of what happened with that call, anything that happened, if you're mad, if you're a Warriors fan, if you're a Cavs fan, at the end of the day, the Cavs still had an opportunity to win that game, bottom line.
Yeah.
So if George Hill hits those free throws, we're not talking about this. J.R. Smith doesn't make that play.
But it's a whole different game. If that game was
that was a game changing call, though. That was a game changing call.
It was game changing.
You're talking about the Warriors got two free throws. The Cavaliers would have had possession of the basketball.
And
that was a game changing call, and it was a horrible call. And I totally agree with JQ on that. And in that instance, obviously, I agree with you as well, Andre. I mean, there was George Hill missing that free throw. J.R. Smith really could have went right up with the basketball. I mean, he could have really caught the ball in the air and put it right back in. I mean, if he had any kind of brains. And but that was
a game-changing call.
I mean, two of those blunders were the Cavs, but that was a game-changing call. It allowed the Warriors to tie the game up. The Cavs could eat it. The Cavs could either put pressure on the Warriors right there and force them to foul, or it could have ran some more time off the clock. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, that was a game-changing call. I mean, that could have really, if they would have kept that call the way it is, the way it should have been, I mean, that could have almost sealed the victory for the Cavs, and we would have never got to the situation with George Hill missing the free throw and J.R. Smith's blunder. And it was a bad call. I mean, the NBA, I don't know if they're going to admit it. Well, they didn't admit it. But it was they admitted some other bad calls against the Cavs. Mm-hmm. But they didn't say that one was a bad one. It was a bad decision. And, you know, most of the sports writers across America has agreed. And it was just a bad decision by the referees in that game. I mean, you don't make that kind of call in that situation or that basketball game.
Point blank, agreed.
I'm not making light of it. I want to make sure I'm coming across like that, too, because I will say for the 50 millionth time, there's a lot of referees that I've hated that made calls against my Braves, against my Falcons, against everything, and no matter what it is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. So
that's part of the beast, unfortunately.
It is part of that. So I want to come across, I'm not making light of the situation, but I am saying that sometimes you got to – it's tough to play over the refs and play against them because there are going to be some bad – that's human nature, as we talked about, too. So we're trying to correct it. And there's still some opportunities to win no matter, you know, you get jobbed all the time. Like, man, I mean, freaking Eric Gray, whatever that freaking ref for the Braves, I can't freaking remember his name, but he's – anyway, there's been bad calls no matter what in all scenarios too. So you're not making light of the situation, but, you got to play through that in certain instances too, game-changing or not. All right, let's wrap this up here before we have any more coronaries here.
And let's talk about and this is interesting, Rob. Is this something that you pulled off as far as James Harden's playoff performance, or this is kind of a reflection, Rob? What was your thoughts about this particular topic? I'm going to let you kind of go with this one.
Well, I know we haven't really had a show since the Western Conference Finals ended, and so I just didn't want to lose sight of that. James Harden, who's probably going to be the league's MVP, but in my opinion, he was underwhelming in the playoffs. And yet again, it's not the first time he's been underwhelming in the playoffs. And I think when the Rockets needed him to come up big, you didn't see any of the, you didn't even see a LeBron James type of performance where he could have tried to attempt to carry his team to victory. And you just didn't see it. I didn't see the energy level. I just didn't see the aggression. You just didn't see the James Harden that we saw in the regular season. And I don't think we saw that much even some of the earlier series victories here in the playoffs. And to me, he has yet to really step up to that level in playoff time. And he has not played to an MVP caliber player when it's gotten to the playoffs yet in his career. And we haven't seen that. And they really needed him to come up big, and he did not. Especially in game 6 and 7 when Chris Paul was out. And really, you know, if you even get to the game 5, I mean, Chris Paul really willed that team to a victory, but he's supposed to be the MVP. And you just didn't see it. You just didn't see the fight. I didn't see the fight. I didn't see the courage. I didn't see an MVP player. And it really cost the Rockets.
He played hot potato. He did not want the basketball. He played hot potato with that basketball in the – Yeah, you're right. But I thought that when I was watching it, he didn't want the basketball, and I totally agree with you. And then when I talked about it, and you know, when we were talking about it going into the playoffs, where I was not high on the Raptors for the same reason, and I said if I'm gonna say that about Toronto, I'm gonna have to say the same thing about Houston, because I need to see Chris Paul and James Harden do it in the playoffs with the chips on the line. And unfortunately, you know, Chris Paul, you're right, willed him to that game, but then he got hurt and he couldn't play. So I still feel like that's a knock on him, not being able to play for whatever reason you want to talk about. When you talk about Clay sitting out here with hyperextended knees and you know, ankle sprains and everything else, he's out there playing and producing, and, you know, Chris Paul's on the bench. And James Harden has been who James Harden is. And it's going to be crazy to watch LeBron doing these things in the playoffs and still not going to get a victory, a title out of it. But, like, you know what, if you had to wait and watch, like, the first couple of rounds of the playoffs before you cash your MVP vote, I think LeBron James would be the MVP. But it's a regular season award, and I get it. But, you know, it's gonna be funny to watch that ceremony after that, you know, I don't want the ball kind of performance, and watching what LeBron is doing, even in the losing performance against Golden State. And you're like, man, we picked the wrong dude. And I think it's going to hurt him really bad going forward. I think Russell Westbrook is going to have the same problem. Even all those great regular seasons, if you have one of those Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James, where they're right there in the conversation, and you like, you know what, after I make this vote, I know those three guys are going to ball, and these other guys that may raise up during the regular season, if they get in, they ain't going to make it. I feel like that's going to start to weigh in on the voters, even though it's not supposed to. I think it's going to, because it's going to be hard not to, because James Harden was, for the MVP, that's
underwhelming.
You got to be able, you've got to be talking about taking the game over. And he was just out there. He was just a guy. And it is what it is. I agree with you, Rob.
And for God's sake, how many three-pointers is Trevor Ariza going to attempt before he make one?
Over 25? What, they missed 25 straight?
Yeah, keep trying, man. You got to hit one of them one time. No. That was
ridiculous. But speaking of LeBron James, he's got 80 points in the first two games in the NBA Finals. That's second only to Jerry West in NBA history for the most points in the first two games of the NBA Finals. And, of course, he passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the second most points in NBA Finals history tonight. But, like I said, it's showing up in a losing effort, unfortunately, for his sake.
Yeah, come on, Dre. He's a fool.
Are you laughing at him? Oh, man. Rob, that's talking about James Harden reminded me of that. I forgot to send that to you guys. Hopefully you enjoy that, man. But just to kind of like
talk about
the internet always wins, right? It's undefeated, as JQ says.
But yeah, just to kind of, it was underwhelming to see James Harden. And we do got to talk about, you know, what's happening next year with the Rockets, because, you know, I think Chris Paul is kind of on that 1 year deal. If not, so I guess I got to figure out what's going to happen, if I'm not mistaken. But really quickly, just to talk about, you know, we've beaten up James Harden, and something's got to change going into this, because again, you're the MVP. We talked about, Jake, you said it's for the regular season. And I don't know. I mean, we've given him, you know, problems as far as the defense and whatever too. But just if you're not hitting your shot, something else has got to, you got to have a secondary thing too. Something else has got to click with Harden. You know, this is not working. You know, maybe I need to adjust this. Or I'm not Harden, but you got to figure out something to help your team win. Like, you know, whether it's your will or, all right, we're going to dig in, I'm going to play some defense, because he seemed disinterested in the last couple of games. Like, I don't even know what happened, man. It's like, dude.
Yeah.
Do you know that you're not in the finals? I mean, you know, you need to go all in. You need to be diving for ball. I mean, I don't know it just seems like he wasn't there, man. He didn't have the intensity to, like, will his team. Like, if I'm going out, I'm going out swinging. You know what I'm saying? Not like, ooh,
right.
You know? It just didn't seem like he had that desire, man, to kind of, like, lift his squad up, man. And even if you miss, you know, 20-something shots or whatever, and you go, Trevor, dude, keep shooting, bro. I trust you, man, because, you know, you got to – getting that foxhole mentality to kind of lift your team up, man. I don't think he has it, man. It's kind of tough, man. But I mean, where do you go if you're the Rockets? I mean, do you add? Do you kind of say, hey, Chris Paul, that was an aberration. Do you add another shooter to that squad? I mean, what do you do to kind of, like, you know, this is what you're trying to get. I mean, how do you beat, you know, the Warriors, if you will? I don't know.
Well, I think. You know, obviously they made it to the Western Conference Finals, and they lost 4 games of 3. From the looks of it, they still probably will give the Warriors the toughest series in this year's playoffs. But I think as a general manager and as a head coach and as an organization, you have to keep trying to find a way to get more good players on your team. I think that's the only way you can beat the Warriors. I mean, when the Warriors are fully healthy, they got 5 All-Stars on that team. And the only way you're going to be able to beat them or combat that, I think you have to be able to find a way to get as many All-Stars on your team. And that's easier said than done, because you, at some point, in order to catch up, the Warriors got lucky. Well, I'm not going to say lucky. I think it takes a combination of luck and skill. But they were able to draft players like Curry and Thompson and Draymond Green. And which means they were able to get those guys at their initial contracts, which allowed them to add players like Durant and Iguodala to the mix.
Livingston.
They were able to add those players to the mix, because Steph Curry, you got to remember, when they signed Kevin Durant initially, Curry only had a 4-year, $44 million deal. So they had the cap space in order to do that. And so the Warriors was in a perfect situation. You know, you can go back to a football scenario where Russell Wilson with the Seahawks on his rookie deals. They were able to pay a lot of other players so much money because he was on a rookie deal from a football standpoint. But, you know, getting back to this, in order for an organization to catch the Warriors, that's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have as many good players on your team as possible. And at this stage, for an organization like the Rockets, for an organization like the Cavaliers, for an organization like the 76ers or even the Pelicans, they're going to have either cap space to get more players, or they're going to – oh, the Celtics too, of course. And the Celtics might be that team that might be the closest if healthy.
Agreed.
But if you're going to have to try to find a way to get good players that want to come and win and take a pay cut. And LeBron James has got to ask himself at this point in his career, I know we're going to get to this topic shortly, is how bad do you want to win? You already make $2 million a week, which is $104 million a year. And whether you take a pay cut to go somewhere or whether you get a big contract, with your endorsements, you're probably still going to make that kind of money. So at this point in your career, how bad do you want to win? Do you want to go to a team and take a serious pay cut? They got a lot of stars. Or do you want to keep getting a big fat payday when you're already making $2 million a week? When you're already buying $40,000 clothes and outfits, make $104 million a year, how bad do you want to win?
Yeah.
No, agreed.
so I'll hold on to that one for the next topic. But to the Rockets, to your point, Dre, it comes down to those financial gymnastics, because it's what do you do?
Like
it's that kind of that Carmelo situation of, if I sign LeBron, and to Rob's point, if he's not willing to do that, now I've got to gut my team to make that happen. But even to make that happen, they've got two problems. They've got Eric Gordon's contract, which is a problem, and Ryan Anderson's contract, which is a problem. And you've got Clint Capella,
yeah,
who's up for a big deal. And even though he's a restricted free agent, and you say, I'm going to max it, somebody's going to throw a big number at him to try to get you away from him, away from the Rockets. And you say, oh, I'm going to max it. Okay, now you've maxed out or given Capella a lot of money. Now you've got Capella, Harden, re-signing Paul to big deals. And then you're already on the hook for Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. So which other GMs are going to – how are you going to sweeten that pot for them? How many number ones can you throw into that mix, or can you get a couple of number ones and Eric going to get rid of that contract or Ryan Anderson to free up that cap space? Because you're looking at – those draft picks are going to be in the, you know, 25 to 30 if we do what we're supposed to do. So those draft picks probably aren't going to really make a difference for us. Yes, you can find some diamonds in the rough, but more often than not, those guys aren't going to come in and make a difference because you've got this star-laden team. So – how do you do that if you're the Rockets of getting behind, you know, those contracts? So it's going to be hard to move Ryan Anderson for one, because Ryan Anderson, it's just nobody wants that contract. So you're going to have to throw,
yeah,
at least one number one into that deal to get rid of Ryan Anderson. But other GMs know what you're doing, right? Like, I know why you're trying to give me this deal, because you want to free up space to get a LeBron James. I'm not going to help you by taking this, even if I want that number one pick, because I know it's going to also put me behind the eight ball, because you're putting LeBron James with James Harden and Chris Paul. And once you talk about James Harden, if you add LeBron James or a Paul George or somebody like that to that mix, and you elevate that team, like how good is that number one, that first round pick, going to be for me and my team to where I can eventually overcome you? Because that's the ultimate end game, is to overcome you and get to a title. Now I got to overcome,
yep,
you and overcome Golden State. I just don't see other GMs saying, yeah, I'm going to make that deal, knowing what it means in the landscape of the NBA. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wow. Rob, anything else you want to add to that, man, or are we good before we get on to the last topic as
nope,
far as
I,
LeBron
know,
going to?
I think
to,
both, yep, of those analysis, you know, I think is on point when it comes to the Rockets.
Gotcha. All right, gentlemen, let's finish this strong here. Let's talk about, lastly, I keep going back and forth, man. One day I think LeBron's going to go, I think he's going to stay. This series is definitely – the way he
it's
gave
over
a look at JR, he probably wants to be like,
yeah, it's over,
bro, I'm out.
Yes. Yes, that's over.
And I guess
I thought after game one, you could see,
yeah,
it all over,
yeah,
over LeBron James' face that he was gone.
I'm,
yes,
out. I'm out.
Yes.
And I thought for sure, I'll be honest, and I think I've even said it on the show a few times this year, that I think he was going to come back to Cleveland regardless, that he was just going to try to fight it out as best he can in Cleveland. But after game one and the bonehead move by J.R. Smith, and that's the kind,
yeah,
of guys he's rolling out there with, I,
yep,
think he's gone. He's gone somewhere. And, you know,
he's gone.
And we'll have to see, you know, how, you know, what kind of payday he's going to get. We're going to see how bad he wants to win. You know, like, you know, we just talked about the dollars. He makes $2 million a week. He makes $104 million a year. You don't have, you really want to win and go to a great team, you don't really have to take a big payday. And, you know, we'll see. I was, you know, it's easy for me to say not to get the money. And, you know, but.
No, it ain't. Because he's going to get it.
Yeah.
He's going to get it. You're right. He's going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get it. You know, keep going. You're right. I'm just saying, you're right. He's going to get it. It's easy for you to say that because he's not one of those fringe stars that has to maximize his NBA contract in order to set himself and his kids' kids up for future success.
Yep.
He's already, already there. The thing about Cleveland is they have those same problems, right? You sign Kyle Korver to a 3-year deal. You sign J.R. Smith to that deal. You sign Tristan Thompson to that deal. They're kind of locked into those contracts. Jordan Clarkson signed his deal before he got traded.
Yeah.
With the Lakers.
All these guys they traded
for
already have deals in place.
They're all,
they have
all
no
have
cap
deals.
Flexibility.
Zero. Zero. At all. So now you're banking on what, the 8th pick in the draft to help you out?
That ain't going to help.
No, sir.
Not
no.
in the next
so
few
you're
years.
Right. I totally agree. I thought Cleveland had a chance, but after game one and the way you said it, the way he looked at J.R. Smith and J.R. tried to explain to him and he walked away, I said, yeah, man, you go ahead and clear that locker out. That dude right there is gone. So what do you do? And Rob makes an excellent point. How much are you willing to sacrifice to win when you have all these other outside pursuits where you can make that money? Philadelphia, the only problem I have with Philadelphia, and I mean, you know, I've talked about Philadelphia a lot, is the fact that he and Ben Simmons are redundant a little bit in their games.
Yeah.
And the fact that
I think
it would
hurt Ben Simmons' development, too. I really do.
Yeah.
It depends. You know what? I can't say that because it depends, again, on LeBron James. It's not so much also the money. Is he willing to be say what he's going to say and play more off the ball, refine more of his shooting skills where he doesn't have to have the offense flow through him where he has to have the ball as much and have such a high usage rate where he can let Ben Simmons develop that way and play off of him and pair more with Embiid to let Ben run that Magic Johnson kind of role and let Ben be the facilitator to let LeBron and Embiid get going where LeBron's always so used to having to make sure that he gets everybody else going, right? So it's that piece of it. If he's willing to see that kind of control on the court and take a little less money but improve other parts of his game in order to put himself in the best chance to win, that's what you have. I think Cleveland's out. I think it's really Philadelphia, Houston, and an outside shot of L.A. only because he's got these outside pursuits where L.A. will be a good landing spot. And L.A. wouldn't have to trade all of those assets away to get him and gut the team. They can add to that. And you say, I'm going to give up Julius Randle to get LeBron James. Yeah, sign me up twice, you know, every day and twice on Sunday. Right. Like, you know, it's not like trading for Carmelo where you have to, you know, gut your team to get him. You can sign him outright with that cap space and keep the core that you've built up. So that's what goes in the Lakers' favor. But Philadelphia has more, you know, asset talent that's more at that level to take the next step. But it's on LeBron. Is he willing to do those things financially and on the court?
Hold on, Rob. Before you say that, that's a thought too. We did say the same thing about, you know, facilitators with, you know, I thought the Rockets and Chris Paul were gonna have some challenges with James Harden. They worked it out too, so that could sort of work too for Philadelphia too.
And I was gonna say that too.
I was gonna get to that too.
That said, you know, Paul and Harden, we thought that, you know, especially last year when Harden was practically a point guard for the Rockets, that they were able to make it work this year with both of those guys being ball handlers. And I think, look, you know, JQ makes also a very good point here. If you go back to some of the days with LeBron with the Miami Heat, and LeBron played off the ball a lot with the Heat. And if you remember, LeBron was playing even more in the post with the Heat. You know, they were playing him like at the four position a lot, and they were using him in the post a lot. And I don't know if you remember, he spent one offseason studying Hakeem Olajuwon's game when he was with the Heat.
Yep.
And they utilized him in the post a lot. And they would probably have to, if he was to go to Philly, he would probably have to go back to a similar role in order for them to be successful because you don't want to hurt the development of Ben Simmons. And where he, obviously Ben Simmons has got a lot more years left in this league than LeBron has. So if you're the Sixers, you definitely do not want to hurt his development and his process and going forward. But LeBron would almost have to go to that type of role and be a facilitator from the post position and draw double teams and kickouts and things of that nature. He would have to be that type of player, similar to what he had to do when he was with Miami, where he had to play big because that was the only way Miami could really be successful at that point. And so he would probably have to go back to a similar role. But, you know, that front court, Simmons, LeBron, and Embiid, and he obviously would still have an easier chance of getting to the finals in the East than he would in the Western Conference. So that is something for him to think about. You know, obviously going, if Houston is able to find a way with Chris Paul and James Harden, doesn't want to step up to be a leader. So LeBron could easily go there and step up to be the lead guy because nobody there other than Chris Paul wants to step up and be a leader. Their MVP doesn't want to step up to be a leader. So LeBron could definitely be that guy. As well. And I know I'm dreaming a little bit, but shucks, if he can go to New Orleans with Boogie Cousins and Anthony Davis, that's also the best front court in the NBA. you know, with Drew Holiday and Rondo, but he would have to obviously the Pelicans would have to take a
weed
serious
down.
He had to take a serious pay cut to go there.
But
you look at the talent on that Pelicans team. If he was to go there, I mean, you can't tell me
it's
team would be in contention.
I'm not saying that. My counter to New Orleans and also to Philly is the fact that you say that. But what are you doing with Embiid? Do you try to make Embiid? You don't want to hurt Simmons' growth. You also don't want to hurt Embiid's growth as well, right? So you don't want to try to restrict him to a Chris Bosh role where he's sitting in the corner waiting on corner threes. How do you put both of those guys, who you know, and Embiid, a seven-footer, take him out the post? Because it's hard to have two guys in the post. So Van's going to play at the elbow. You put LeBron in the post. Where does Embiid go in that floor spacing? The same thing, I think, what happens if he goes to New Orleans. If you sign him and somehow can sign Rondo and Cousins, now you've got that, you've got a big front court. But how do you space those guys to where you can actually have a flow, a free-flowing offense, to where you can actually use those that your size advantage and your talent advantage to hurt other teams? So you have to take all of that also, I think, into consideration when you talk about going to those teams. Because I agree with you. You don't want to – Embiid and Simmons, I think, have a lot more years left, of course, than LeBron does. But in terms of floor spacing and roles in the offense in that situation, how do you do that? What do you do with a non-shooter in Simmons and really a non-shooter? LeBron is a scorer, not a shooter. What do you do with him as a non-shooter? Now you have two non-shooters and a big man out there as your three best players. How do you make other teams pay in terms of floor spacing?
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, it's been fun. And like I said, I know we've had a great time talking with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the words that we talked about are priceless as far as if you're LeBron, you're probably hoping that you get swept so you can be like, I can get out of here as fast as possible. Because, you know, he's like, I'm done. I just think just the fact that it just feels like he's the total disappointment, man, as far as that too, man. But that's – maybe that's just me kind of projecting that too. But, again, we've had fun. I love the fact that we're able to get through a lot of topics and just kind of get caught up as far as the week too, man. So, Rob, hope you had a good time on your vacation and like that too and whatnot.
Yes, sir.
Too. I don't know if it was vacation or what too, man. But, anyway – if you have anything else to say, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up, man. So that's me, man. So all you guys have your last thoughts, and then we can kind of go from there. So it's on you, Mr. JQ. You wrap this up. So go ahead.
Oh, no, man. Like I said, I appreciate y'all for inviting me into the fold and having great, great sports conversation with y'all. It's always a pleasure. It's crazy when we skip a week. It seems like something is missing in my life when that doesn't happen. So getting us back on schedule is always a good thing. And I agree, Rob, out there, you know, in the buggies riding past the dunes, I think in Hawaii, or going past the lava spills or wherever he was. I told you, Rob was that guy. He'd be in every corner of the world. So I'm just trying to grow up and be like him one day.
We all are.
Again, love everybody for listening to it. And when you stop it flying to Vegas, I'm the low man on the totem pole. I got to get my stuff together. I'm just doing minor league baseball. I got to get it together. So appreciate everybody
for dialing in, listening to the thing. All the games of the freaking, you know, Mercedes-Benz. I'm not mad. You still get connections, bro, so it's all good, man. So, yeah.
Hey, man, go to every Major League Baseball All-Star game.
No, I go to the city where the game is. I don't go to the exact game. So there's a difference. I go party. I don't go in the game.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back at it next Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. You don't want to miss it. Like I say, we'll still obviously be covering NBA, whether it be the finals, whether it be the NBA draft. We'll still be talking a little NBA. We're going to start incorporating some football into the show here very soon. Obviously, a lot of teams are wrapping up mini camps and OTAs and things of that nature. Just about every team's rosters are pretty much in place, and we can start getting into some predictions and maybe even into some college football here as well going forward here. So we're pretty close to that time of the year, people.
Yes.
Getting to training camp, end of July, preseason, August, and so we're getting really, really close to that time of the year. I know it's going to be kind of quiet, well, we still got NBA free agency in July, so that's going to probably keep us going a good bit too. So it never stops in the sports world. We're going to be here to cover it all for you people. You don't want to miss it. Good night.
Yes, sir.
And I was just going to say too, you know, I get a little I'm very humbled and very fortunate to make these opportunities happen too, because that's why I try to keep everything under wraps too, man. So it was kind of like me. It was through a convention, and they're like, hey, we'd love to have you DJ with us in Vegas. I'm thinking, yeah, whatever. You know, certain things happen. You
don't
know things that actually happen. I know. It's just funny because, like, literally, and I'm texting and I emailed her, hey, I didn't know if this is going to happen. She's like, no, this is actually happening. You know, thank you for hitting us up. You know, we'll fly you out there, and, you know, we got everything taken care of. I'm like, what? You know, so, you know, it's just one
Let's
of those things
it.
That, you know, we'll have some fun. And granted, and like we all talked about, like I told this to the wifey and everyone,
that's why we're so excited to have the Raiders actually go to Vegas, because you can have a trip where you're like, hey, let's fly to Vegas, let's watch our team, let's spend the weekend, you know, and have a good time too. So that's kind of a big draw too, you know, to having,
yeah,
you know, NFL squad in Vegas too. So there's, you know, not to say that I've been there and I don't know enough about, you know, everything, whatever, but I just want to go and enjoy it, have a fun time too, man. So it'll be fun, low key. It's one of those things kind of added to the bucket list as far as I was able to kind of DJ out there and kind of do my thing, man. So I'm excited about that and, you know, kind of going from there too. So it's good. So a lot of love for you guys.
Yeah,
man.
So
that's what we do.
One last thing.
Be careful.
Yeah. Hey, listen, one last thing.
Definitely.
We didn't hit on the NFL policy, and then we all think it's trash. But what we're doing right now in terms of us arming our lives and being able to go here and have a positive show as three black men in 2018 in America, I think it's a very solid and underrated thing that needs to be brought more to the forefront. We can sit and have a conversation intellectually about what's going on in life, sports,
mm-hmm,
world, and whatever, and broadcast that out to the world, and you guys pick it up, and we truly appreciate y'all listening to us, but we want to make sure that, you know, little kids see people like us doing this in the world. It makes the world of difference to little black boys growing up in the world. So we appreciate all the support and understand that we take the responsibility and we carry it and we love it and we appreciate y'all riding with us.
Wow.
Very well said. Very good point there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, speaking of that NFL, I mean, that's
Yeah,
I better be
careful
what I say, but you know what I think about that ruling that the NFL came up with there regarding it. I think they're totally missing the point, and I think the NFL is becoming Trump-esque, and you know, and it's really unfortunate, and I think they're really missing the point behind what the players are trying to accomplish, and to have them to protest in a locker room. I mean, I just think it's ridiculous, and I'm really trying to bite my tongue to say something I shouldn't say. But
I'm with you.
It's horrendous for them to come down with that decision. And I don't know.
I'm going
to
say this.
And
Go ahead, Rob.
No, I thought somebody was going to say something.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I was going to let you finish your point.
No, go ahead. You go. You know, if I keep talking, I'm going to say something I shouldn't.
So, and I know
y'all might want to kick me off the show.
I was going to say this, and I know that, you know, I always make jokes about Tim Tebow, and this actually, somebody brought this up to me, and I want you guys to really research this, because I couldn't find certain evidence as far as whenever he was taking a knee, you know, he was supposedly praying. Was that during the anthem? Because I've heard about that. And I know that he was, you know, saying he was praying, and he was commended as far as, oh, he's, you know, because he's a Christian, whatever. That was like, it was not a protest. But I think there's something with that, and if we can kind of tie that, because again, I saw something, and I'm like, I want to make sure before I like blast him and say, hey, this was exactly like, because he definitely we were all T-bowing, you know, whenever we were like, oh, let's do it, and it's during the national anthem, and. Mm-hmm. It was during the abortion thing, but I think also there's something with he did during the national anthem as well, and he was commended for that too. So if we can kind of find that, that's our kind of homework, because I saw some pieces of it, but then again, it was more or less like he was praying. It wasn't like it was during the anthem, but I definitely think it was during the anthem. It was something about he was protesting something too. So I'm just going to say that if that's the case, and if that's the case, then we got to look at that. That's all I'm going to say. But yeah, go ahead.
You know the eyes of the media, Tim Tebow could do no wrong.
100%.
Right. I mean, we'll have another hour discussion about this. So, yeah, no, I read that and I saw that as well, and we lost track of that because they wanted us to lose track of it. But I didn't mean to bring it down. I just want to make sure that, that people understand that we take what we're doing very seriously in terms of – I mean, we have fun, but we take it very seriously in terms of projecting what you can be and what you should ascribe to. In your life, you know what I'm saying? Not that we're perfect, but those things and those opportunities are out there for you. You don't have to be cast in this role. You can do this and do this, all these other things at the same time. So to all my young brothers and sisters out there, keep your head up, and, you know, we're pulling for you, and we're trying to point you down the right path.
You don't have to be Pusha T versus Drake. You don't have to be Pusha T versus Drake, man. You keep things positive,
right,
as always, man. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just joking.
Oh, yeah, you're stupid.
I don't know who Pusha T is. I heard the name probably more in the last week or two.
The Clips? You know about the Clips and the Neptunes.
Oh, man.
It's nuts.
You're so
stupid. Thank you. That was a very eloquently stated, man. And just as we wrap this up, man, 100% agreement as far as we have so many opportunities nowadays and the fact that we're able to use this show. And granted, I was looking at the show topics today. We're on season 6, and we've been doing this for like – I know it sounds crazy. Season 6.
Wow.
I think
I lost track of it. I ain't been doing it that long.
Yeah. So we've been doing this for about 6 years. Now, granted, you know, JQ, we probably got you the last maybe 2 years or so. Yeah, we've been going for a good about 6 years whenever I look at the seasons, man. So I know we have some fun. We just kind of like get better and better. We're at Big Mike. We had different pieces. We have some interesting calls. And, you know, we get some feedback. So,
some calls
again,
we didn't want.
Exactly. I don't know where this is going to go, but hell, if we have 10 years in and somebody's like, hey, you know, hell, let's do this, man. So we'll have fun with it. But at least we can have an opportunity for people to say that we've got this and we've added this to the bucket list that started out as, hey, let's talk some sports. And then here we are, you know, just kind of randomly talking about different things and getting feedback, man. So I appreciate Rob and I appreciate you, JQ, is kind of coming in and kind of doing their thing, man. So it's been fantastic. So that's what we'll do, man. We'll keep this going for sure, man.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Oh, yeah, the best is yet to come for us. So we keep pressing.
Absolutely.
We keep pushing. The best is yet to come. We'll be surprised what's going to come our way.
Yep.
Absolutely.
All right, gentlemen, get some rest. Have a fantastic week. We'll see you guys again. We're going to be texting throughout the week, as we always do. And then, like I said, final text backs because, you know, your boy, I'm getting through shows and everything like that too, but it's a fun time, man. We're excited. Something like you, man. Keep it up. Keep it
you
up.
You just
got to
call
him
out. You know, when you called him out about him being sleepy, he responded. You just got to call him out, JQ.
I
know.
I look at my phone and I see it, and then I'm like, okay, I'm not going to say anything. And then of course, somebody says something, and then I got a response. I'm like, man, come on, man. I'm up, man. I just don't feel like responding at the point, man.
When you call him out about skipping work to go to the Falcons game or watch a Falcons game, well, yeah,
Here we go. You know what's funny, too? I used to be able to, like, text on my phone – or, excuse me, through my computer, and because something happened, now I can't do that. So now that's why it's like I don't really freaking want to have these long messages on my text screen or whatever, but it's all good. I'll get myself together whenever I get that feature back loaded, but it's all good. But anyway, all good.
Secret out.
Yeah, I know. It's all good. All right, gentlemen. Like I said, have a good week. Rob, get some rest. I know you got to get up early, man. But we'll be in contact as always, man. Before your girl cuts us off, man. I just had this feeling, man. So it's all good.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Be good, gentlemen. Have a good week.
Good night,
all right,
people.
Guys.